previously on the Adventure Zone.
And now standing before you is this hideous, tall, hairy creature. It is what you maybe would have considered before you met the real deal. It's Bigfoot. This thing pushes Ned through the rift and follows behind, and then the rift disappears. Everybody in there sees Dewey get flung into the room, badly bloodied at this point, and Sheriff Owens runs and jumps in a squad car and takes off in hot pursuit.
I'm going to grab onto the back of Sheriff's car.
Also, you are standing in a virtual space. You feel this electric shock at your neck. You are in what appears to be the decrepit lobby of some sort of hotel. The being has just stepped through the rift. It perches itself on the edge of the table and then dives claws first in your direction.
That fucking chunky roll out of the way.
Yeah, get those threes out. Trav, you want to get a... Dad got his four out. Juice got his three out. Do you want to get a nasty one out?
Get a clunker out, Trav.
Get a clunker out. It feels good.
Squeeze out a clunker on roll 20.
Just cleanse the
port.
Oh,
that's an eight.
That's pretty good. Dang it. Hey, welcome to the Max Fun Drive episode.
Yuppie. And then a nine?
Oh, no. Travis is blowing his load. And we're here to tell you about the Max Fun Drive. We're so... Speaking of...
Blowing loads.
Yeah, we're talking about the Max Fun Drive this week. We're so excited to be here with you, joining in this wonderful communion we call podcasts.
We may sound like we're about to finish, but we are just getting started talking about this great drive. Folks, Maximum Fun, if you don't know, is our podcast network. It'd be weird if you didn't know that, because we talk about it a lot. Maximum Fun is our podcast network, and once a year we come to you hat in hand and say, hey, If you could spare a few bucks a month to help keep the network going, help keep our shows plural going, we would sure appreciate it. So what does that mean to you, the viewer, the listener? It means that you need to head over to MaximumFun.org/donate and choose what donation level you can get on board with, be it 5, 10, 25, all the way up to $200 if you're a stone cold super fan, I guess. Everything else I could think of was pejorative, and I didn't want to be pejorative, because like, if you want to do that,
if you're the CEO of Stone Cold Creamery, which is not what it's called, Stone Cold Steve Austin and you want to support us at $200 a month, go nuts. If you do support us, you first off you get the knowledge that you are helping us grow.
It directly, is by the way. You'll put in the shows that you listen to when you register your donation, and those are the shows that get your cash.
And it's because of that support that we've been able to turn this into our career. It's why we've been able to take these shows so seriously and devote so much time to them and grow in the ways that we've grown. And not only that, you also get some pretty slick gifts as well. That let's talk about those maybe during the
well, can
the
I
break
just say
middle.
My yes. favorite one that everyone gets at every level, all kinds of bonus content, not just the new bonus content from this year, but all bonus content going back through the Max Fun Drives. And this year, the bonus episode for the Adventure Zone, you'll be able to hear us play Honey Heist, which is a one-page RPG in which I will DM and Griffin, Dad, and Justin play bears trying to steal honey from HoneyCon.
Very excited to record that one. Very excited to get out on that one. So we're going to talk more about the Max Fun Drive right now. If you feel the spirit move you, it's MaximumFun.org/donate. And let's do the show.
You're in a dungeon.
You're in a big dungeon. And there's a big goblin. And
oh, no.
he has a crown. You take the crown and win.
Okay.
So Maximum Fun, we need the money to keep this motherfucker afloat. No.
Maximum Fun pays Griffin by the word.
Yes. I want to pick it up with Ned because that was sort of the thing we did not resolve at the... Well, actually, there was a lot of cliffhangering happening at the end of the last episode.
And some car hangering.
And some car hangering, yes. But let's start with Ned. Ned, to remind you, and I'm talking to Dad now, not Ned. You are in...
Is Ned
some...
there? Can I... Ned? Can we speak with
can
Ned?
Can we channel him?
Hello!
God, what's worse than when James Lipton does that, though? Yeah, did you ever see that one with The Simpsons where he's talking to Yeardley Smith and he's like, can we speak with Bart Simpson?
Oh, God.
That James, one with, no! That one with The Simpsons, they're all there, and I'm pretty sure he just goes one by one like, now do Mo. And yeah, it just gets weird.
I'm sorry. I said Yeardley Smith, who is Lisa. I meant Nancy Cartwright. I am very sorry.
Get out of here.
Ned is in some sort of building. It's kind of dark, and you haven't really had time to get your surroundings. You get the impression that it is some sort of hotel or something along those lines, just based on the fact that you kind of woke up in this place. Well, you woke up in some sort of weird VR zone and then got broken out of that and now are in this sort of dilapidated hotel, you think. You stepped out into the main lobby and you heard this humming coming from down the hallway towards this conference room. And you walked toward the humming and got some details on the abomination you all are hunting this time around. But then the abomination saw you and is starting to come in your direction.
Well, I think Ned's instincts would be to flee.
Yes.
To run away.
That tracks, yes.
Is he anywhere near any of those? You said there were rifts all around the room. Is he near any of them?
So you are, you definitely have this monster between you and these rifts. There is just no way that you would be, like, you're in this hallway that he has moved into. There's no way that you get past him without getting mauled by this big nasty sort of monstrous Bigfoot creature. So you get the impression that, like, if you want to get in that room, you're either going to have to overpower this thing or, you know, lose it somehow in this building.
Ned would, but he's not going to initiate a confrontation. I mean, Ned hasn't become that brave.
Okay.
I think he runs away. I think he runs up one of those staircases.
Okay, yeah, we can kind of zork this out if you want. I have sort of a layout of this place in my mind. The staircase is back in the lobby, and the kind of exits from here are the main exit of the building, which is just completely boarded up. There is a back office behind the reception desk, and then there is the staircase leading upstairs. Are you just trying to run away from this thing so you can, like, break line of sight? And
yeah, I think that's just it's just his... flight instincts have kicked in, and he's just going to run as fast as his little behind can carry him.
Why don't you act under
pressure?
Wait,
are you running
then?
On your butt?
Yeah, he's doing so about.
Are you using your butt to run?
That's a good point. That would not be successful. All right, let's see. Tell you, there, I think. And that would be a 6.
Plus cool?
Plus cool, which is 1. That's a 7. Whew.
Okay, on a 7, you get a mixed success. I give you a worse outcome, hard choice, or price to pay. I think on this one, it would be a price to pay. You are able to, like, slide to a halt and get up on the first landing of the stairs. But this thing is, like, bigger than you and faster than you, and it charges into you and tries to grab onto you, and you do feel it get, like, a hand on you that you kind of peel off as you sprint up the stairs, and it continues on and, like, crashes into the wall, and you lose it as you run up the stairs. But as you reach the second story, you reach down and you realize that you dropped the gun, the Nerf
you
blaster.
You didn't do that to me.
I mean, it's not gone forever, but it is down in the lobby somewhere. But you have gotten away from this thing, and you are on the second floor. You are standing in just, like, this one long single hallway, and there are 5 doors sort of branching off into other rooms. Through one, you see kind of a, like, decrepit-looking bathroom. Through one, you see a bedroom suite. And the floor in that room is just, like, almost entirely gone. It has just been smashed through. It's just a big hole for the most part. And through that hole, actually, you can kind of see that rear office that the door was leading into down in the lobby. And the other two, like, bedrooms on the sides of this hallway, they're in sort of similar states of disrepair. And then at the end of this hallway, you can see, just from your perspective, you see this one really large bedroom suite. And there is some sort of light shining from beyond your field of view. And the monster, you cannot see you right now. It is at the base of the stairs. What do you do?
I don't know if Ned would leave without the gun.
Yeah, I mean.
Okay, Ned. No, he had an any choice. I got to play true to the character. He tears ass down the hallway towards the big room with the light.
Okay. You race forward into the largest bedroom up on this floor. Are you shutting the door behind you? Is this like, are you?
Yep.
Okay.
I'm shutting the door and diving under the bed.
Okay, I like it. You shut the door, and as you do so, you hear the Bigfoot monster reach the top of the stairs. You hear like planks of wood sort of groaning under its weight. And you enter the room and you slide under the bed. You can kind of see really quickly that this room is actually very well illuminated. It's the brightest room that you've like been in this dark building so far. And just like from looking around this master suite, you can tell like this is definitely a hotel. I think in the closet, actually, you can see some like old like slippers and like bathrobes. And I mean, just the layout of this building, like you are now for sure, like this is a hotel. So at the edge of this room, the big double bed that you slid under, you see a figure lying in this bed. It is a humanoid shape that has been sort of incapacitated in a similar manner as what you were in just minutes ago. This like weird sort of virtual space. Only it seems like a bit more attention and care went into like their imprisonment. It's not just like their head that is encased in light. Like their entire body is just in this cocoon of light. And on the abdomen of this like weird cocoon, you see some sort of like interface with moving lines and figures in some sort of language that you like have never seen before in your life. As you sort of slide under the bed to hide, the monster is getting closer and closer, and it makes its way into the room that you're in and starts looking around. I think the role plays here. I don't think you, unless you have something else you want to do, if you're just trying to wait this thing out.
Yeah, I think hiding is a wonderful choice. This is the Ned choice to make.
Is there a hide under pressure?
hide under bed?
The role that you did continues to play here. I'm not going to make you roll to hide again.
God, there's dust bunnies.
It's not
they're literal. They're literal monster dust bunnies.
Yeah. Yes.
You, from your perspective, I mean, obviously you can see the big, nasty, big feet of the Bigfoot. You see this thing just sort of walking around the room. And then it stops to sort of check up on this figure that is lying in the bed immediately above you. And then it walks over to the corner of this room and you see it
urinate.
You see it urinate and it's cool. It's so funny. Justin, you still got that soundboard hooked up? Because you got to be on the quick draw with stuff like that when Travis brings out the heat.
I'll be ready next time.
Okay. You see it sort of fiddling with another piece of technology. Travis, here it comes. Yeah, thank you. It's messing with some sort of like another sort of piece of technology like that is unlike anything you've ever seen before. It looks like these like glass bubbles of all these different kind of shapes and sizes, over 100 of them you'd estimate, and they are all attached to what looks like this like big bag or something. You are having a hard time telling what it is from your perspective under the bed with the monster here in it, but he's doing something with it. Yeah, I think after a while he turns and he starts he leaves the room and you can hear him walk down the hallway and look for you in some other spot. He's gone. What do you do?
Okay, I'm going to investigate the figure in the bed.
Okay, this would be...
That's a mystery, isn't it? Investigate a mystery?
I think tell me what the action is and then we'll figure out if it's actually a role. Because if you're just looking at this thing, then...
Yeah, I want to look at the weird inscription or the weird words on its abdomen. Are the words on an actual item?
It's like on this, like, imagine like your skin is just like covered in light. Like it is in the shape of a humanoid person. And the readout is like in the light on the abdomen. It is a weird thing. I think investigate a mystery, right? You do not know what this thing is. So anything you can get from this is going to be through inference. And I think that's worth rolling for.
Okay. So investigate a mystery. That's a 9 plus sharp, which is yes. 2. That's an 11.
Cool. So you can hold two questions. And I think this is appropriate because this is like wrapped into the mystery of what this thing is. What happened here? What sort of creature is it? What can it do? What can hurt it? Where did it go? What is it going to do? What is being concealed here?
Let's start with what is being concealed here.
Okay.
Because there's obviously something inside this light shape.
Okay, sure. With what is being concealed here, I mean, the identity of this person or whoever it is being concealed. You can see like on this cocoon of light, there's something being projected on the other side of it, like on the inside of it, that you can only kind of tell. It's almost like the same scene you saw, like your memories flashing. You see what look like little like video files playing out or something like that on the other side of the screen. So you can't like make out what it is, but they are flashing. Somebody is in there and they are being sort of they are having their sort of memories collected in the same way that yours were just moments ago. That is what you can tell.
Okay, can I use my other question to investigate something else, or does it have to be that? Okay, then I'm going to walk over to the bag with all the balls on it.
Okay.
The ball nice, bag.
Dude. The ball bag. And what are the questions?
What happened here? What sort of creature is it?
And what's the deal with the ball bag?
What's the deal with the ball bag? This is the worst. What can hurt it? Where did it go? What was it going to do? What's being concealed here?
What can it do? That's the question I'm asking. What can it do?
So this machine, now that you're closer to it, you kind of get a better perspective on it. The bag almost looks like a large textile sack, like a really, really big one, almost like more of a kind of like a body bag, but with the proportions of like a tent or something like that. It's a big bag. And fastened to it are these orbs. I think with this roll, since you're investigating it, you can count the orbs. And there's exactly 118 of them. And inside of them are just like different kind of free-floating like particles. And these particles like floating around in these orbs, they have like different behaviors. Some sort of conglomerate around each other in these perfect orbits. Some meld together and split apart. Some bounce around like sort of quickly and erratically. And that is what the machine looks like. As far as what can it do, there is another sort of readout similar to the one using like the similar arcane language. That you saw on the person over on the bed, and you can't read that language. But there are sort of crude images also like accompanying that language. And right now, the shape that is on it is in the shape of like a human body. That is what you can tell this thing does.
You said the orbs were attached to it, right?
Yeah, it's almost like they are feeding into the bag as if they are some sort of energy source or something like that feeds into this big bag.
Being a thief, Ned's really going to want to try to take one of those orbs.
Okay. Yeah, I think you could. Yeah, you can just do it. Tell me what the orb looks like that you pull off. What is the stuff, the like particle sort of stuff bouncing around in it look like? And you can tell me literally anything right now.
It looks like a sea serpent.
Okay. I mean, it's not sentient like that. It is just some sort of particles. But this orb, it just like pops out fairly easily from the bag. And as it does so, you actually see the readout kind of like turn red and start blinking. And it starts making actually kind of a quiet beeping noise. And you don't hear like the monster nearby immediately, but you get the sense that this is not a great thing right now. And you could potentially be caught here if you hang around. But you have successfully retrieved one of these orbs.
Then I think he's gonna get the hell out of there.
Okay. Yeah.
And run back. And I say run back to the rift room. I have this image of him running out and jumping on the banister of the stairs and sliding down the banister.
Okay.
Because that would be quieter than running down the stairs.
I get you. I'm going to make you roll again because this is sort of a different motion, I guess. We're kind of like playing Calvin Ball a little bit, but
so is this act under pressure?
This would be act under pressure. You trying to scamper? That is not great. That is a critical failure. What is it? What's it called? That's just a failure.
Just a loss. Just regular loss. Get your point of experience.
Get your
first
mark.
Off.
Yeah. That's a dad rolled a 4 plus cool, which is not going to get in there.
We got to start saying the number first.
You step foot out of that big bedroom into the hallway and walk down towards the stairs. And as you do, just like the top stair goes, and just like instantly the Bigfoot is there at the base of the stairs. You also see like a few feet behind him sitting in the middle of the lobby is your gun. It is past him. Again, you have more exits to other rooms behind you. The monster is now standing between you and the bottom of the stairs. What do you do?
Jump.
Duck.
What's going on?
So you're doing some tricks. You're doing. We could play this. We could just do like a audio book version of Tony Hawk Pro Skater. If you want to tell me like all the tricks that you do, and then we can assign point values to them. I didn't envision there being like half pipes on the road in Kepler, but maybe we can.
There's probably like. I probably get 50 points for avoiding Mountain Dew bottles that have been cast on the road.
Would there be just one paragraph that's just grind?
Yes, Duck grinds. And it's so cool. He collects all the letters in skate and he slaps a sticker up on.
He gets the videotapes.
He slaps a sticker up on Bam Margera's dad's butt.
Considering Duck's age is, I think, just a couple years older than me, his main trick right now is like, not dying.
Sure.
Like, don't die.
We need to clear something up because we actually didn't do it in the last like acquisition thing. You have this helmet and it's your skateboard helmet that gives you +1 armor. I don't know if we've dealt any harm to Duck, but do not forget about that because something tells me you're going to need it on this one because you are skitching on the back of the man. Fucking Scrivener changed the word skitching. It auto-corrected it to switching. What a narc.
Scrivener is an arc, and I do want to make sure, like, I was thinking about it, like, what would make sense for Duck to do, because Duck's been very aware of his mortality ever since he lost his abilities. I think when he did this, he literally forgot that he was not indestructible anymore. He literally like didn't remember, and I think that it was like about 90 seconds into this sketching where he remembered, like, oh fuck, like god damn it, that's right, shit, fuck.
Okay, it is right around that moment while you are zooming around behind the sheriff's car. Are you trying to hide? Are you trying to like stay out of sight? Are you like?
I mean, I'm holding onto the rear bumper, so I feel like my default would be you're gonna stop, right? I mean, if you see a human sketching you will stop for prolonged periods of time.
He's in pursuit of
somebody. He is chasing the Bigfoot monster.
I guess, but I don't want to have to roll to see if he notices me. I think he's just staying down.
Okay, you are you're staying down. And what's the plan here? Why did you decide to do this? What was the logic before you forgot you're invincible?
You're asking me why I sketched somebody? Now who's the fucking narc?
Okay.
Yeah, I'm following, like, the sheriff can move faster than I can. I'm following the Bigfoot.
Okay.
With the sheriff.
Gotcha. So it's right around when you have this like realization of you're not invincible anymore that the sheriff whips his car around the like hairpin turn where the road splits off and starts heading up to Topside.
And then the sheriff pops out of the car and starts ghost riding the whip?
Starts ghost riding. Everybody's stunting. It's so hot right now. before you like hit that turn, you can actually catch a glimpse of the Bigfoot, who like just made the turn before the sheriff's car and is still like charging on all fours up the mountainside road. You also get the feeling that he caught a glimpse of you as well. And the chase continues as the sheriff tries to keep the patrol car steady, just like gunning the engines. And then you pass under the like underpass beneath the funicular tram as the road continues on. And it's dark for like just a second. And then when you come out the other side, you feel the sheriff tap the brakes and slow down, like hesitating for a moment. And you hear him like curse. And then you see the Bigfoot suddenly appear 10 feet behind you, charging in your direction. What do you do?
Yeah, hold on a second. I'm trying to think. Let me do a little like physics calculation in my head here. I'm going to scramble up on top of the car and smack it and tell him to drive.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, hey. Hey, man, the fucking Bigfoot's behind you, dude. Drive. Jesus Christ. Hey, I've been sketchy this whole time, brother. I'm really sorry, but you got to fucking drive right now, dude. Come on. I'm vulnerable as hell. Come on. Don't make me fight Bigfoot. I wasn't thinking through this shit. Go. Like a fucking fight Bigfoot.
Act under pressure for sure. I think I was going to make you manipulate the sheriff, but I think all the tensions are quite high right now. So act under pressure.
You know what? I'm actually going to do trust me. When you tell a normal person the truth in order to protect them from danger, roll a plus charm.
Ooh, okay. I like that even better.
Yep.
That's 8 plus 2. That's a 10.
I love it.
Yeah.
Did your charm like increase when you became a normie, right?
It didn't increase. I just chose
it. Yeah.
Charm is actually +2 for all the different ratings you could pick for the mundane.
I love
it's
that.
Always +2 charm.
That's so cool. Okay. Then the sheriff, I think the sheriff taps on the brakes like again, and you really have to work to keep your footing on the car. And then he sees like the Bigfoot about to just like smash into you, and he guns it. And as he does so, the Bigfoot starts to lose ground on you, and then he just stops, and you see him back off through another one of those rifts. And then the sheriff yells, "What the fuck are you doing on my car, Duck Newton?"
Yeah, I was trying. You're going to ask me why I skitched? Now who's the narc?
He starts to yell something else that like the wind whipping past you is so like loud you have a hard time making it out. And then he slams on the gas again, and you can tell as you like sort of swing around that the Bigfoot has appeared back in front of your car, and the sheriff is now chasing after it. And you're like you're definitely up on topside now. You're zooming past like Resort Row, where all these like old dilapidated resorts that shut down a while ago when the town's like economy dried up are. You pass the ski lodge, and then just past the turnoff down towards Amnesty Lodge, the Bigfoot disappears past the tree line, and the sheriff slams on the brakes. And you definitely get knocked off the car at that point. I think your helmet protects you. And you see the sheriff hastily park the car, jump out, and draw his service revolver. And he says, "Duck Newton, I don't know what you're doing here. I don't know what I'm dragooning you, Duck Newton. We're not going to let this thing escape. This is the closest I've ever been to finding out what's going on in Kepler, and you're going to help me. You understand me?"
Oh, man. Can you just give me like a second? Jesus Christ.
He grabs you by like the scruff of your collar and starts picking you up.
All right. Calm down. Fuck. I just fell off a car. Jesus. Let me get pull off his asthma in here real quick.
He
all right, hold on. Nope, need another pull. Hold on. Yeah, all right, so Bigfoot's real. Boy, I can't imagine how it must be to find out this way, but Bigfoot's real.
He shakes his head and dips back into the car. And when he comes out, he is holding like this black canister, and he throws it to you and he says, "Now listen, my service revolver is the only weapon I got on me right now, but that there's some industrial strength pepper spray. So I don't know if this thing's got eyes or whatever, but we need to go now. We are losing it." And he takes off into the woods.
Yeah, let's go. Fuck it, man. All right, sure. Why not? If you got the guts, I guess I do too. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go fucking kill Bigfoot there. Let's go.
Aubrey, you... Yes. Where we left you off, you were racing over towards the sheriff's department, where Deputy Dewey was just flung through the front windows of the building by the Bigfoot monster. There were, just like moments ago, a few people standing in the front lobby, and now, like, fearing a continued assault from this monster they just saw, all but one of them have fled. As you approach the building, you see Detective Megan, and she is hunched over the bloodied form of Deputy Dewey. She is applying pressure to his wounds. He's got just these great big sort of slashes across his torso, and she stands up and darts over behind the receptionist desk here in the sheriff's department building, and she starts dialing for an ambulance. And as she sees you come close, she yells, hey, you, you want to be a hero? Put some pressure on that guy's wounds, or else he's going to bleed out.
Do you want to be a hero? Then come over here and help me.
I'm calling an ambulance. Are you kidding me?
I'm going to read a bad situation.
Okay, that's the move. Like, tell me what Aubrey is doing.
So basically, I'm checking on Deputy Dewey, trying to figure out if he even has time before an ambulance would get there, how bad he looks, if he's in danger, basically.
Okay, there are questions that deal with that. You rolled a 9 plus sharp. What's your sharp?
Plus sharp is plus 1, so a 10.
A 10, cool. You get to hold 3. What's my best way in? What's my best way out? Are there any dangers we haven't noticed? What's the biggest threat? What's most vulnerable to me? What's the best way to protect the victims? I don't know that you have... you have 3 to spend here. I don't know that you're going to... I don't know that 3 of these are relevant to you, but...
Yeah, I'm going to go with what's the best way to protect the victim.
Yeah, I think that's the obvious one here. An ambulance ain't going to make it. Dewey does not have 10 minutes to spare. Like, Dewey does not have time for that. He is on death's door at this very moment.
So he's looking worse than Keith did when Aubrey healed him.
Yes, this is to use game terminology, mini harm. Okay. He has passed the dying check mark on your health bar there. He is unstable, and he's looking bad.
Okay, I'm gonna do some big magic.
Ooh, okay.
To try to do a big old heal on Dewey here.
Okay, we've never done this before. Let's talk about big magic. The keeper may require you. What do you want to do? You just want to heal him?
Yeah, so I'm trying to do a big heal, like instead of just healing like for one, healing for like 2 or 3.
I mean, let's not gamify that, right?
Yeah.
Let's not say I'm trying to
stabilize
with my,
him.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I like that. So the keeper may require that you spend a lot of time researching the magic ritual. Nah. That you experiment with the spell. There will be lots of failures before you get it right. We don't have time for that either. You could need rare. This is not fun to listen to.
Yeah, the three that I think would make most sense is either it needs multiple people, so Megan and Aubrey.
Okay.
You need to use magic as part of the ritual, so I would have to use magic multiple times, or it will have a specific side effect or danger.
Okay, I know what the side effect or danger is going to be, but I'm not going to tell you that. That's
right.
One of the requirements.
Right.
I agree with you. I think you're going to have to use magic multiple times, and you're going to like have to tell me what that looks like. For the 2 people to help, you don't need 2 people to help you do the ritual, because Detective Megan does not know magic, but you will need her cooperation in some other form. So those are the terms of big magic.
Got it.
And you're going to have to roll to like do it like usual, but let's move on with the scene. So what do you do?
Okay, listen, Megan, right?
Yeah.
An ambulance ain't gonna make it, so call an ambulance if you want to and watch our friend Dewey here bleed out while we wait. Now, you come here, put pressure on this, and I'm gonna try something a little extreme, but I've studied Reiki, and I'm gonna heal him by manipulating energy, but I need your help to put pressure here to give me time to use it. So you help me with the energy, okay?
This is going to be a big manipulate. This is a wild, wild thing for you to
you don't
trick
know that.
Somebody into doing.
You don't know that. It's a 7 plus 1. It's an 8.
They'll do it, but only if you do something for them right now to show that you mean it.
I'm going to make my hands glow.
Yeah, okay. Are you going to make them glow like
catch on
him?
Fire. No, just catch on fire like I have power.
I don't think that this would work. Like, I'm trying to justify it, but I think you setting your hands on fire is not going to calm this person down. I think that you setting your hands on fire is going
to... Well, I was doing it to kind of show, like, I'm not lying about having power of some sort to heal him, control over energy. This is more of, like, shocking into convincing.
That's how my brain would work, I think, if someone had fire hands.
Because basically, right now, we are in a power struggle where Megan is going to feel like an authority figure, and I look like just some kid in a leather vest or a denim vest or whatever. And I need to make some kind of power move that's like,
okay,
you should listen to me.
Beautiful tapestry you've painted.
Thank you.
Travis, I don't know, a muumuu or bike shorts
whatever
or, I don't
fuck.
Know, something, clothes, you know.
You know, big hair. It's fine.
Here's what I will give you. She sees you set your hands on fire, and like, that's enough weird stuff for her today, and she just faints. She just like collapses. And you get the impression that she could have interfered with whatever you wanted to do here, but now she is more or less neutralized. That's the amount of cooperation.
That's fine. Okay.
Yeah. Now it's just you and a nearly dead Dewey.
That's a sequel to Drop Dead Fred, mm-hmm. Nearly Dead Dewey.
Nearly Dead Dewey.
Enjoyed it.
All right, Magic. This is a big one. You and me, we're going to save Dewey's life. So I need you to help me heal him.
What's the physical move look like here? What are you doing?
So I would say, like, with the wounds and everything, trying to close those up so there's, like, a stitching, but with magic to close up the wounds. And whatever the magical form of, like, you know, a blood transfusion would be.
Okay.
Like, gotta get some blood back into this man. So maybe the blood that's, like, spilled out on the floor, like, pulling back in.
Shit, that's gross. I mean, you've never done anything like this before. This is so far outside of your comfort zone. So go ahead and use magic, and this is the roll.
Well,
oh my God.
Not great, but it's a 3, but I'm just going to go ahead and do luck because I want to save Dewey's life.
I still get to add in the side effect or danger.
Absolutely. Positively.
So how much luck do you have?
Yeah, this will be my 4th of 8.
Dang, dude.
I'm halfway out. But listen, I know that if it was me and I had the choice, I would use 1 point of whatever to save somebody's life. This is a pretty big one. So
yeah. You put your hands on Dewey, and it's definitely harder than it was when you... This is probably the most exertion any spell that you've ever, like, cast has done.
I'm picturing, like, the orange in the eye, like, kind of sparkling a little bit, you know, like, really... I don't know if that's actually connected to magic, but in my mind it is.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm not sure, Trevor. How's real magic work again?
Yeah, I know, absolutely. And maybe the red hair dye in Aubrey's hair gets a little brighter.
How's the lighting?
It's really good. Really good lighting, but suddenly everything becomes a little bit like a black light poster.
Actually, it goes completely dark.
Oh.
It is almost like a trap door just like opened on a stage beneath you and Deputy Dewey, and you are both just falling. And your falling starts to slow down, and then you're not moving anymore. You're just kind of like weightless in this void.
As we said, folks, it is the Maximum Fun Drive, the time of year where we come to you and ask you to help us support the network. Do you like the Adventure Zone? Well, now's your chance to prove it.
Step up
and prove it with the real currency in life, money. That's right. You can go to MaximumFun.org/donate and you can pledge how much you can spare to help keep our network and our shows going. It's you can donate as little as $5 per month, and then that goes, all those donation levels go all the way up to $200 a month. Now, Dad, you are always so gifted at this. Don't you tell the people, if they pledge, let's say $5 a month, Travis already told them they're going to get hundreds of hours of exclusive bonus content. What happens if they donate $10 per month, Daddy?
Well, they still get that bonus content.
Oh, yeah.
But also, there is a brand new batch of Drive exclusive enamel pins that Megan Lynn Cott designed.
New designs.
Brand new. New designs for every Max Fun show. You pick your favorite. I like the Cryptonomica one, kept by West Virginia, but that's really up to you. Also, you get a Max Fun membership card. So that's pretty cool, which will get you into literally thousands of free events all across the country. Things that you don't have to pay for.
Wow, that's amazing.
That was my joke.
Yeah, that's not true.
He's into free events. Free events.
Oh.
Yeah. Get it? Oh. Yeah, there we go. Now, for $20 a month,
oh, God, that one's so long. Hold on. We got to wait this one out. I hate the crickets one.
Fucking bomb. If everybody stops bombing, we don't have to hear the crickets.
For $20 a month, you get the pin. You get the bonus content. You get the membership card. You also get this really cool 550-piece Maximum Fun puzzle. Designed by Jeffrey Tice.
You almost told him about the secret extra 5 pieces.
Oh, yeah. And this would be so much fun as you listen to the Adventure Zone of putting this puzzle together. Yeah.
If you're the sort of person for whom the maximum amount of fun you can have is putting together a 550-piece puzzle, we've got great news for you.
$35. In addition to all that other stuff, you get a glass coffee mug engraved with the absolutely adorable Max Fun Rocket logo.
Now,
and all the other stuff.
If I could, just for a moment, someone might say, hey, What good does it do? Maybe I can only give $5 a month. Does that really make a difference? And let me tell you, as someone who's been working with Max Fun for the last, this is 8 years now, I think, it makes a huge difference. We have launched so many new shows. We have been able to make podcasting our full-time focus. We take it on the road. We focus on making new merch. We do all of these things because every year you have proven to us that these shows matter to you. And so we have made them a priority because you have told us that they matter. So we're constantly trying to make our shows better, be that through improving, you know, the subject matter or even the audio quality. We're always on that chase to find the best microphone, the best audio setup so that we can make sure our episodes don't sound like shit because we know how much you all hate that.
We're going to get back to the rest.
Let us know.
We're going to get back to the rest of the episode. We'll be back a little bit later to tell you about some of the other the things you can get for donating. But you all have been so supportive in the past, and I can't tell you how much it means. We are trying to get to 25,000 new and upgrading members.
Never happen.
So if this show is important to you, if the shows that we make are important to you and you want to show your support for them, go to MaximumFun.org/donate and help us hit that goal and support the things that you like. And we'll be back later to tell you more.
You said there was a reception desk.
Yes.
All right. So he wouldn't be jumping all the way to the floor. He'd be jumping to the reception desk, which would be a little bit of a smaller drop.
Okay. I mean, it's still going to be definitely an act under pressure. This is a big boy sort of gymnastic movement that I'm excited to see play out.
And that would be
an 11. A big 11. Yeah, okay.
Plus cool. That's a 12.
Right? Yes. Well done. Okay, yeah, you jump sort of over the side of the stairs as this thing is like charging up towards you, and you land on the reception desk. And I think you got enough sort of distance from the monster that you can sort of make a move here without being necessarily threatened. You got your gun sort of a few feet ahead of you down on the floor of the lobby. You've got the exit into the office immediately behind you, and you have the hallway leading down to the conference room with the rifts in it.
I picture him landing on the reception desk like Neo landing from Flying, you know, with his coat all you know, in
yeah,
the air.
Yeah, a pair of sunglasses just form on your face, and Lawrence Fishburne gives you a big smile.
I say he makes a run for the rift room, scooping up the gun as he pelts past it.
Okay, I think it's going to be a little bit rowdier in the rift room if you try and do both of those things, but I'm not going to make you roll again for it. Yeah, you do that. You are able to sort of make an arc through the lobby and swoop down and grab your gun.
The monster's running up the stairs, right?
The monster has now like pivoted and is now coming back down at you. And in the time it takes you to like swoop and grab your gun, I think he makes it down the stairs, but you still have an advantage over him. You are still in front of him, and you are able to run into the conference room with it at your tail. And now, like, you're in the conference room, you can kind of see, you see, like, half a dozen rifts, right? And you, Ned, I think, in particular, have seen these all over. For whatever reason, like, you have been more perceptive when you've seen them. You see, through one of them, you see the front office of the morgue, where, you know, you just were before you were pulled out, and it is empty. You can tell. You can see sort of a handful of like oblivious sheriff's department employees just kind of poking around the morgue, like cleaning up or searching for clues or whatever. Through another rift, you see the hornet's nest from like behind a patch of trees, and you can tell like this is the one that you saw when you were investigating down at the hornet's nest. There are a couple other ones that are kind of tightly closed. That you can't really see where they're pointing. Through one of them, you can tell you see like a tall barbed wire covered fence. What the fence is protecting, you can't really tell. And then there is a final one that opens up into the clearing behind Amnesty Lodge, through which you can see the archway. There's also one more rift in this room that is like almost completely shut. And it is like glowing the brightest of all of these. Again, like you kind of only have, you see this in like the flash of a second because this thing is so hot on your tail.
Ned have access to all of them?
Yeah, they are sort of all around the room. You would be able to make it into any of them. I mean, the ones that are, you've never like knowingly traveled through, like this thing pulled you through a rift, so you're not exactly sure how, you're just kind of, I guess, hoping that it's like a door that you can run through. But yes, it appears like you would be able to get to any of them.
Okay, then I say Ned makes a run, jumps towards the one where he can see the barbed wire because he doesn't want to go to the hornet's nest because the hornets are there. He doesn't want to go to the morgue because the sheriff's office is there. The other one is too bright. That's too scary. Why not go for the one that looks the most innocuous? And he does this thing where he turns in midair and shoots the Narf blaster back
at
the monster and goes flying backwards through the rift.
Why don't you kick some ass and we'll see how this slow-mo John Woo dive plays out.
Yeah. Shit. Three. It's a three.
That's a three.
Now, how lucky do you feel, Ned?
Are you feeling lucky, punk?
Yeah, I got to use a luck here.
Okay.
I got to.
Mark experience and burn a point of luck.
No, you don't get
here.
Experience if you do luck.
Oh, you don't? Okay, never mind.
I think so.
Okay, yeah, Ned, describe one more time. I think this thing is like on the opposite end of the room. This rift is on the opposite end of this like conference table. So describe the scene as you.
I say, okay, so Ned's flying as fast as he can. I say the monster even gets close enough to grab the tail end of his scarf and pull it off of him. And that kind of
has a lovely memento.
Okay.
And that kind of turns Ned, so as he turns, he's now facing the monster. He already had the Narf blaster in his hand, so he didn't have to draw it. He shoots it with the Narf blaster and goes flying backwards into the rift.
What's the damage here on the Narf blaster?
Two harm, yes.
Two harm. Yeah, you see it like rip just some of its like meat off, and as it, because you got this like badass beam gun now, right? Like,
right.
That was the modification you did to it. It like just rips off part of its just like body, and you see it just disintegrate into these particles that go flying behind it, and it seems to like howl. But it's not actually quite as bad as when Aubrey stabbed it with her flying knife. But you did some damage to it. It also because you get to pick one extra effect here for kick some ass. So gain the advantage, take one forward, inflict terrible harm. You suffer less harm, or you force them where you want them.
I say force them where I want them because I don't want them to come through the rift.
Okay, yeah. Then the beam of light like pushes them backward and gives them a little bit of space. They get like a claw. They claw your like the back of your calf for one harm. But that's like all that they get before you turn and blast them with this laser beam that knocks them backwards. And then you are through the rift, and they think about chasing you through it, but they seem like they stop, and then just the rift disappears. And now you're standing in front of this barbed wire fence. Rather, you're probably lying prone by this barbed wire fence. And as you correct yourself and look up, you realize you are inside the perimeter surrounding the Green Bank telescope. Duck, you and Sheriff Zeke are now like walking through the woods, and he's trying to track the Bigfoot. And
I imagine it stinks like fucking shit.
I don't think it smells very good.
Oh, you're talking about Bigfoot, not the sheriff, right?
No, the sheriff's fine. I have to imagine Bigfoot stinks all the hell.
What do you think the sheriff smells like?
Like a man.
You
like sandalwood and old leather.
You actually get like, it smells when you were close to it in the morgue. Obviously like there was a chemical smell from like morgue chemicals, but it stank like sulfur. Like it smelled like rotten eggs. It smelled real. You are right. It smelled real, real bad. I think you're mostly tracking it through, you know, its giant footprints in the snow all around you. And like perplexingly, like they will go for a distance and then just stop and then reappear like a dozen yards away. And so trying to track it is kind of tough. And you get the sense that it could be anywhere. And so you and the sheriff are just sort of watching each other's back as you go through the woods. And he says, you fought this thing back in the morgue? What do I need to know?
I don't understand it any better than you do, man. It is dangerous. It is big. You saw that. You saw it's big. We shouldn't be fighting it. There's one. There's a good one for you. This is a mistake. If you want to bounce, like I am with you. This me and you taking this thing on together, not smart. Not smart at all. I'm on the record for that.
Are you trying to convince him to leave, or is this just Duck being kind of scared?
Duck has lived a life not worrying about physical danger, right?
Right.
I mean, like, he's lived a life not worrying about that. So, like, I think having to process that as, like imagine that if you live for four decades being invulnerable, and then suddenly you were, and, like, you didn't know what was, like, you were thinking about things as what is dangerous and what is not for the first time in your entire life. Like, I think he is processing it, but I think he still knows that it's dangerous and this is his job. And this is the best hope they have, but I don't think he's crazy about it. Let me say that.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. He like hesitates for a second. You see him like lower his revolver. And he says, I mean, oh God, you're probably, and then you hear like a sound, in the distance, this loud roaring, and it is getting louder and closer, like super fast. And Sheriff Owens turns to face it. And then you see Hollis pull up, on top of their motorbike, and they like they make a running stop. They are like running off the bike and just like letting it slide and fall over. And they run up towards you. They've got this like long rebar club with the that's like got this handle of just like wrapped leather around the bottom of it. And they are wielding it, and they move closer to you and they say, "It's close, right?"
What?
The monster. Come on, Doc. Are you really going to keep pretending?
Nah, honestly, I'm happy you're here. Three of us means we're, well, we're still probably going to die, but it's like better odds for sure. So you want to help us fight Bigfoot? Because Bigfoot's real. Let me catch up. Bigfoot's real. And I feel comfortable telling you about that because I feel like there's an 80% chance you, me, and Dupree over here are going to fucking Beef Town. And we don't have much of a choice here, folks, but let's keep it rolling. Anyway, Bigfoot's real. Now you're caught up. Let's go kill him.
Both of them are just like staring at you with just like blank, shocked expressions. And then there is another sound. There is just like this heavy breathing. It's like screeching, almost like taunting noise that is sort of just ping-ponging all around you in the woods. Almost like it's toying with you, trying to scare the three of you. And then suddenly, Duck, you notice a shadow above falling on the three of you, and you see Bigfoot pouncing downward toward your party. What do you do?
He's like flying through the air down at me?
He has like jumped down off of the boughs of a tree and is coming down towards the three of you.
All right. I am going to... I mean, I don't even think about it, really. I probably should, but I don't think about it. I just swing. I pull Beacon out in one motion and take a swing at him.
Yeah.
I swing at him. That is a 9 + 2 = 11. So I pull Beacon out with one move and just slice her across the middle. And I was like, oh, guys, one more thing. My belt's a sword. Anyway. Shit, now you're caught up. And I can talk. Yeah, oh, yeah. Shit. My belt's a sword. I just stabbed Bigfoot. I can talk. And those are the three things. Now you are indeed caught up. Let's go.
You get to pick one extra effect here. You gain the advantage. Take one forward. You inflict terrible harm. You suffer less harm, or you force them where you want them.
I am probably going to, I'm not going to take this thing on my own. I feel pretty confident about that.
Right.
I'm going to force him where I want him. I'm going to try to knock him down to the ground and maybe give us time to escape.
Okay. You don't know that the other two people here want to escape, but...
I'm pretty sure they don't.
Okay. The three of you were like kind of clustered together, like back to back to back, watching the perimeter. And the Bigfoot like dove down toward your group. And with like the power of your slash, which has to have taken you by surprise, right? You're not Superman anymore. But you just did a badass attack and cut this thing for 2 harm, right?
Yeah. I think that one of the things that's important to realize is like Beacon is also a sentient sword. So like I kind of feel like even though I'm mundane, it's probably better than just some asshole with a metal belt, yeah. Right? Like he does have something of a mind of his own.
And as the whip sword just like caught Bigfoot like perfectly with the tip, it sort of disrupted his dive, and so like you are the only one that catches the brunt of the harm that he dishes out. He just like smashes, tackles you with tremendous force, and you take 2 harm, which your helmet cushions the blow of a little bit, and he rolls to the ground. And with that, like, now Hollis, they just run up with this big rebar club and just take a golf swing and smashes this Bigfoot across the face. And like without hesitating, Sheriff Owens spins on his heels and just empties his revolver in the direction of the Bigfoot and catches him with a few of the bullets. And with that, the Bigfoot like falls dramatically and then tries to right itself and just like limps off deeper into the woods. And Hollis and Sheriff Owens are like already giving chase.
Good work. I did think we were going to die there. But we can go dive deeper in the woods. That's fine. Let's go. Come on.
As you
make it real hard. You know what? Get a few more miles out there. This is going to be true crime podcast material. You know, I'd love to be able to create that. That's a system of perpetual giving right there. Come on. Let's go.
You are pursuing them, pursuing the Bigfoot, and you're nearing a tree line. And when you see it, you realize where you are. You realize what you're close to. You realize where this thing is leading you all. And you break through the tree line alongside Hollis and Sheriff Owens, and you are standing in the clearing with the archway. And the Bigfoot is nowhere to be seen. It is quiet now. It has led you all here. And Hollis says, "This is exactly where I lost sight of it last time." And Owens nods in acknowledgement, and both of them sort of start sweeping the perimeter. And that's when you remember, they can't see the gate because they don't know it's there. But they are looking around trying to catch the trail of this monster again. What do you do?
Is it going back through the back? It escaping through the archway would be bad, good, neutral. How would I, in my role, how would I feel about that?
It would be peculiar, I feel like. It is, you have not seen a monster go through the archway. You have never seen a monster actually cross through the archway. So you don't know. It's also been using these rifts, so you're not entirely sure. It could have been either of those things. One important thing is that it is not the middle of the night. There's no moonlight shining down, so the archway is not active. So you can see that it's just sort of its dormant state. But the two of them are kind of wandering around this clearing, looking for any sign of this monster that they can. They have not collided with this thing. You remember Duck didn't know it was there, or Ned didn't know it was there, but he crashed his car into it. So they are sweeping the field here trying to find the Bigfoot.
Either investigate a mystery or read a bad situation. Would one of those hold useful here? Which one?
Probably.
It would be more.
Probably read a bad situation.
Okay. Let me do that.
Ooh, that's a good roll.
Of course. Yeah, it's an 11.
Plus sharp?
Plus sharp, which is 1, so it's a 12.
Nice.
Read a bad situation. I'm going to say I can hold 3 of these. What's the best way to protect the victims? I, in this case, would describe as the other two cats.
You might also be on. You realize
and me,
you could potentially
but that's
be on
weird.
The list, right? The best way to actively save the three of you right now is your instincts were right earlier. You are no match for this thing. I think actually here's what you get from that. When it fell down earlier, when you all lit it up, you can tell that it was faking. You can tell that it wanted you to think that it was weakened. And so the best way to protect the victims, which is the three of you potentially, is to get them the fuck out of there.
All right.
You have 2 more.
Okay. What's my best way out?
I think it's with that. I think you definitely know, you can get them to Amnesty Lodge from here. You have made that. You have walked that path so many times that, if you all really need to get the fuck out of there, you can get them to Amnesty Lodge, really quickly, and not have to worry about this thing slaughtering you in the woods.
All right. What is? Are there any dangers we haven't noticed?
With that one. You can see the other two are poking around the other side of the clearing, and behind them, behind another tree line, you can see the Bigfoot, and its face is not this monstrous mask of death anymore. It is more it is calm and pensive. It's like you just went backstage and you saw the actors just hanging out and not being these putting on this the pageantry of the play, and you can read the emotion on this Bigfoot's face, and it is frustrated and it is confused and it is looking at the two people that it led here, and then it looks over and it sees you and it smiles, and then it steps backward and disappears. So, Aubrey, you're not in the sheriff's department anymore. You're somewhere very strange. You look around, and you've got the form of Deputy Dewey in front of you. But both of you are just like inside of this massive hollow sphere. And all around you, everywhere, are visions that are so far away you can barely make out like what they are. It's like you are surrounded by like a skybox in a video game, like just this huge static image that surrounds you on all sides. And you see like root systems growing downward through lush green fields and rivers of magma and waves on the ocean. And it looks like you're looking up at all this stuff from like below a big glass table. And you see these like little pinpricks of light everywhere. Just like concentrated heavily around certain parts of this like sphere you're inside and sparse in others. And some of them are moving and some are flickering and reappearing somewhere else. You are in the middle of just like this massive eco ball. And Dewey's form is floating in front of you and he is motionless, but his wounds are gone. And then floating on the other side of Dewey, a figure appears and... it has a hand extended and pressed gently on Dewey's chest. And this figure is a woman. And you get this like feeling when you look at her. And it's the kind of feeling you get like when you swear you've met someone before, but like 1,000 times stronger than that. Like this presence feels like it could be like family. Like it could be your sister if you had one. And you feel this like warmth and familiarity with this figure, this person who so closely like resembles you in a way. And they actually look a little bit surprised to see you. And she does a little wave. What do you do?
Magic? Are you magic?
She like cocks her head to the side and smiles and does not take her hand off of Dewey. And she kind of like gestures down towards him.
You're helping me do magic, right? To help Dewey?
She looks up at you and smiles and nods.
Awesome. Hey, thanks. I sure do appreciate it.
She takes her other hand now and places it. What she does is she reaches out with her other hand and she grabs you by the wrist. It feels like you've just like grabbed a... like a live wire, but not painful. You just feel this like rush of like euphoria and energy as she touches you, and she places your hand on Dewey, and then she nods.
Okay, let's do this. Should we chant like heal, 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 or is what?
She is so focused on Dewey right now that she does not, she actually closes her eyes. Now you can feel that energy again, almost like it is being sort of pushed through Dewey. Like you've formed like a conduit, with this placing, laying on hands that the two of you are doing. And Dewey starts to glow, just this beautiful light. And
he's pregnant.
He is pregnant. He's a wonderful pregnant deputy. And then this figure looks up at you and she opens her eyes and she just has these bright orange glowing eyes. And then you wake up and you are locked in a cell.
Super cool.
You can see from where you are that Detective Megan has left the building. There, she apparently awoke at some point and dragged you in here and dipped. There's nobody in here as far as you can tell. Dewey, you can see, is laying on the floor and he is not breathing. Detective Megan has actually covered him up with a cloth, but you can see Dewey's form under there.
Dewey, wake up, Dewey. I command you, rise. Dewey.
Dewey, come forth.
Dewey. Rise, Dewey, my children of the night.
Dewey does not rise.
Rise. Rise.
But what you do see is from behind the desk in the reception hall, in the lobby there, you see a ring of keys and you see them just kind of like shake a little bit. And then they lift up and they slide across the desk and then they come into the room that you're in with the cells, and you can kind of see some sort of like they are floating around on this fog, and it's taking taking shape. This fog is as the keys get closer, and they go into the gate of the cell that you're in, and you hear the lock click, and the gate swings open, and this fog has fully taken form. It's Deputy Dewey, and he's a ghost.
Aw, shit.
Aw, dang, Dewey.
Hey, folks, sorry to interrupt the show again. Normally, we only have one break in here, but this is a very special time of year, and that is the time where we ask you for money. It's very special to us. It's very special because it means that we get to keep making podcasts for you and turn this into our job because you all have always been so great to support us. When you donate, let's say you donate $10 a month, where's that money going? Well, a small portion of it is going to go to Max Fund to help keep them running the network. They help us find sponsors. They help us refine our content. They help connect us with the other shows. They help connect us with guests and guest experts to put on the show. They do so much to support us and all the other shows in the family. And so a small portion of your donation goes to help them. The rest of it goes entirely to the shows that you listen to. It goes to help them buy equipment and to pay for their house and their children's food and stuff, you know.
What do you do?
What do you need money for? But that is where your donation is going, and it is what helps to keep it, like, really independent. And we love that about the Max Fun Network. We also love the values of the Max Fun Network. It's a place where, like, we still own our show. We own all our stuff. And we're able to do that because you have always been so supportive of us. So we very much appreciate it. And we appreciate you going to MaximumFun.org/donate right now.
Even if all you can do is $5, that'll get you the bonus content. There's so much stuff to get. We did an episode where we played Honey Heist. We have the old episode where we played with Lynn. We've done a lot of stuff with that. Also,
Last year was the four Sherlock Holmes.
And a vampire. Holy shit, that was good. Also, I should mention that we've been on a biweekly schedule. We're going to have another episode up next week where we're doing a the Adventure Zone about amnesty and I guess Live Balance or whatever you want to talk about, the graphic novels, whatever. You can send your questions in now to adventurezonecast@gmail.com.
Or you can tweet it at us, #TTAZZ. I also want to say real quick, if you're already a Max Fund donor, this is a great time to consider upgrading your donation so that way you'll still get all those great gifts. Or this is a great time to tell your friends that they should become Max Fund donors. You know, if you already give and that's all you can do, totally fine. Take to social media and say, hey, Max Fund Drive is going on now. Share that link, MaximumFund.org/donate. This is also, third reminder, a great time to update your credit card info. You know, your credit cards expire or, you know, you change passwords or whatever, and it doesn't always update in the Maximum Fund system. So you can go and make sure you're still giving at that level and make sure that you still support the shows you love.
Daddy, do you want to talk about how you don't work anymore and how you're unemployed?
Yeah, this is all I got, folks. This is it for me.
Please.
This is the only way that I'm staying alive, although I'm putting food in my belly and clothes on my back. For God's sake.
Our daddy was waking up at 3:30 in the morning.
In the morning.
Every morning.
A.M.
To go to work, and now he doesn't have to.
No.
Because you are so generous.
Thank you.
You know, the tax man, the bill man, he's still going to come.
That sword of Damocles is always dangling over my
daddy. It's always dangling over our dad. And so please, our dad made a hugely risky choice. Please do go to MaximumFund.org/donate and keep our dad off the streets.
Bye, everybody.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.